And the time is 10 a.m. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Coming up next on People Rise Up, we will launch It Is Happening Here, a series throughout 2006 looking at fascism in the United States. We'll be back with that in just one moment. Welcome to People Rise Up. My name is Andrew Geller. I'm your regular host here. And today, we're going to begin the series I mentioned at the close of last year, which is going to run the entirety of 2006, though not every show. I believe there will be 16 of them, but don't hold me to that. There'll be at least 14 more. Looking at fascism in the government and society of the United States of America present day. We may get into some history at some point, we may not. I'm going to begin by quoting from a sermon delivered by a Unitarian reverend on November 7th, 2004, at the First Universalist Unitarian Church in Austin, Texas. His name is Reverend Dr. Davidson Lower. He's been on KBOO before. And I just want to state at the outset that I am utilizing this little introduction, the first two paragraphs of his sermon, in fact, because I couldn't have put an introduction to this series better myself. So thanks to him for writing this for me. And afterward, I will do a little defining of the term fascism so that people are clear what it is I'm talking about. And then following that, I will bring today's guest into the mix. His name is Lawrence Britt. He is a political scientist, historian of sorts. He writes a bunch, and he has written an article a couple years back called Fascism Anyone, in which he lists 14 common characteristics of 7 modern fascist states. And those characteristics, as well as corollaries from other sources, will be the basis of the remainder of this series of programs, each program dedicated to a particular characteristic and examining to what extent the government and culture of the United States exemplifies that particular and collectively those characteristics listed for fascist states. So quoting from the Reverend Dr. Davidson Lower, sermon entitled Living Under Fascism, delivered November 7, 2004, First Universalist Unitarian Church of Austin, Texas. Quote, "You may wonder why anyone would try to use the word fascism in a serious discussion of where America is today. It sounds like cheap name-calling or melodramatic allusion to a slew of old war movies. But I am serious. I don't mean it as name-calling at all. I mean to persuade you that the style of governing into which America has slid is most accurately described as fascism, and that the necessary implications of this fact are rightly regarded as terrifying. That's what I am about here. And even if I don't persuade you, I hope to raise the level of your thinking about who and where we are now, to add some nuance and perhaps some useful insights. The word comes from the Latin word fasces, denoting a bundle of sticks tied together. The individual sticks represented citizens, and the bundle represented the state. The message of this metaphor was that it was the bundle that was significant, not the individual sticks. If it sounds un-American, it's worth knowing that the Roman fasces appear on the wall behind the speaker's podium in the chamber of the United States House of Representatives. And at that point, I will leave Reverend Laura's text. It'll be posted on the People Rise Up website. You can refer to it. I want to give you a few different dictionary definitions of fascism. First, this actually comes from Wikipedia, which starts out by stating defining fascism is complicated and contentious. And I would agree. It notes that the word fascism, as I just mentioned, comes from the word, the Roman fasces. It also comes from fascio, which means bundle, and it specifically refers to a political or military group or nation. Merriam-Webster defines fascism as, quote, a political philosophy, movement, or regime that exalts nation and often race above the individual and that stands for a centralized autocratic government headed by a dictatorial leader, severe economic and social regimentation, and forcible suppression of opposition. Instead, the American Heritage Dictionary describes fascism as, quote, a system of government that exercises a dictatorship of the extreme right, typically through the merging of state and business leadership together with belligerent nationalism. Fascism is in opposition to individualism. And according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, can be seen as a form of collectivism. The Encyclopedia Britannica defines collectivism as, quote, any of several types of social organization in which the individual is seen as being subordinate to a social collectivity such as a state, a nation, a race, or a social class. Now, at this point, I'll bring my guest in here. His name is Larry Britt. As I mentioned, he is a political scientist, student of history. He has written many books and articles. He currently writes regularly for the Rochester City, that being New York, newspaper. And he has a piece forthcoming in March in a book called Power and the Global Economy about fascism. And he has written a piece that has been widely distributed on the internet for Free Inquiry Magazine at the, the Center for Secular Humanism at secularhumanism.org, called Fascism Anyone?, in which he comes up with 14 common characteristics gleaned from 7 modern fascist states' experience. So, welcome to KBOO's airwaves, Larry.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you?
Just fine, thanks.
Great. Now, your piece, Fascism Anyone, has created quite a buzz amongst people interested in radical politics, radical critique of the American government, and to a larger extent, society. And in the couple years, I guess this was printed in late 2003, it's been distributed all over the place, and I've seen many, many people refer to it. And I wanted to have you on to launch this series to talk a little bit about how the article came to be, where these 14 terms or not terms, but characteristics came from, and just kind of set the general tone for the rest of the series. So, with that, can you tell us, where did the idea to write this article come from?
Okay, let me begin, though, by saying that I'm not a political scientist. Somehow or other that got on the internet, but
okay,
that's not my background.
Maybe a student of political science.
I spent a career in business, primarily international business, and I've become a writer in about the last 10 years. But I've always had an interest in politics and history and keep myself extremely well informed. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear that I was not an academic. I've been disturbed, as lots of people have been, over the political developments in the U.S. of the last 5 years in particular. I was on a cruise sponsored by the Nation magazine, and I heard a lot of speakers, and I talked to a lot of people, and the word fascism came up all the time. And when I got back from that cruise, I decided that I was going to do a little research to compare just what were the characteristics of the various fascist countries to what's happening in the United States right now. And I chose 7 of them, all of which are out of power right now. It was Nazi Germany, fascist Italy, Franco's Spain, Salazar's Portugal, the Greek colonels in the early 70s, Pinochet, Suharto, I think that's all of them.
And the last two there are Chile and Indonesia, for folks who don't know those leaders' names.
Right. So I just read up all that I could and just began to collect how they operated, what were their characteristics. And I wanted to get the ones that were common to all of them. And these were the 14 that I came up with. I'm very familiar with the history of Germany and Italy and Spain, so, you know, I already owned a lot of information on that, you know, in terms of a book collection, which I have, and it was just a simple matter of defining what they were.
Well,
and Free Inquiry magazine expressed a high interest in doing the article, so it was printed. And I spent an awful lot of time, you know, on the research, hundreds of hours. And, of course, for this kind of work, you don't get paid much. But yeah, I did it because I like to write. But the impact was amazing. The article went all over the Internet. It's been translated into 5 other languages. I've heard from lots and lots of people. I've had speaking engagements. I've been on the radio many times. It was kind of amazing. So what it told me was it struck a very responsive chord, that other people saw this as a significant issue, comparing these characteristics to what is happening in the United States. Other people have opposed it, of course, and say, no, this isn't the United States at all. So it's in the eye of the beholder.
Well, let me go through and just briefly reference the 14 characteristics that you list. They are, and there are themes within them, and we'll discuss a bit of them in the remaining time we have. Are these listed in your paper in any particular order, out of curiosity?
Well, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so in order, they are powerful and continuing expressions of nationalism, disdain for the importance of human rights, identification of enemies and scapegoats as a unifying cause, the supremacy of the military and avid militarism, rampant sexism, a controlled mass media, obsession with national security, religion and ruling elite tied together, power of corporations protected, power of labor suppressed or eliminated, disdain and suppression of intellectuals and the arts, obsession with crime and punishment, rampant cronyism and corruption, and lastly, fraudulent elections. And I want to let people know they're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland. We are beginning It Is Happening Here, a series about fascism in the United States that will run throughout 2006. My guest this morning is Larry Britt. He is author in the context of this show of an article in Free Inquiry magazine called Fascism Anyone. You can find it online at www.secularhumanism.org and then just do a search for Larry Britt, that's B-R-I-T-T. And the People Rise Up website, available from KBOO.fm, also has links to the article, some other resources related to this show, and will assemble a tremendously long list of related materials online over the course of this series. So let's get into some of these characteristics, and we don't have time to go over all 14 or even all the themes in them, so let's just touch on some of the what I view as kind of the more key ones. And it appears to me that the entire concept of kind of fear of other expressed through nationalism and militarism is an extremely important part of any fascist state. Would you care to elaborate upon that or add to that in any way?
Well, nationalism is clearly there, and you know, you can say, you can discuss, you know, what are the reasons for it. In my view, nationalism is emphasized to distract the public away from other issues that they should be paying attention to, and that's been a classic situation, you know, for many of these regimes, including what is happening in the United States right now. I mean, you see flags being waved all over the place every time there's Cheney or Bush gives a speech nowadays. It's, you know, in front of a military audience. That's the way that it has been done. It always has been done.
Well, and it largely, military affairs largely define the Bush administration's tenure.
Yes. I mean, here we are in a situation where the budget for the military proportionally is just about as high as it was during the height of the Cold War, when we had a superpower adversary, and today there is none. What we have is, should be, a police action, but what we call it is this war on terror, just to keep everybody stoked up on it. And we now, as the United States, spend more on our military than the rest of the world combined. I mean, it's unimaginable, the fact that we're armed to the teeth in terms of how much that we spend on the military. And if you look at our potential enemies, whoever they may be, and you know, you add in the countries that are our allies to what we spend on the military, it's 8 or 10 to 1 against any nation state as an adversary, and yet we don't have any adversaries like that. So you'd have to ask yourself, what is this military spending for except to intimidate other countries?
Now, another common theme in some of these characteristics is the sort of the elevation of institution. I mean, it's the defining characteristic of fascism, no matter how you look at it, including in the original writings of Italian philosopher Giovanni Gentile, who's kind of credited as being sort of the philosophical founder of fascism, working very closely with Italian fascist leader Benito Mussolini from very early on. Giovanni Gentile actually helped Mussolini write the entry in the Italian encyclopedia regarding fascism. Another common characteristic is the elevation of business elites, corporations as their representatives, and the oppression or suppression, or as you say, even elimination of representation for basically everybody else, the laborers, the common working folks, us. Why is that an important feature in these fascist states?
Well, I think that fascism has always appealed to the power elite to come into power. You know, they would need money, and therefore, where are you going to get the money? It's going to be from corporations. Corporations had had a lot to do with Hitler coming to power, as well as Mussolini. And labor was always seen as a power center of the left, and therefore it would be suppressed. And this is exactly what happened. And of course, you can see tendencies like that in the U.S. today. The Bush administration has consistently favored corporations in every opportunity that they have, and labor has been suppressed, you know, whenever they can. So that's fairly clear.
Now, just lastly, in kind of broadly looking at these characteristics, I wanted to find out, and I mean, it's obviously the historical record for why this was included, the disdain and suppression of intellectuals and the arts. Now, the intellectual part is pretty clear in my understanding why fascists would need to suppress intellectuals. Intellectuals would be, you know, among the first to question sort of anything. That's kind of one of the roles that people intellectually motivated play. But I'm curious, why the arts? Why was it you found that these seven different fascist states you looked at felt like they needed to suppress the arts? Or is it something in just kind of the basic philosophy of fascism as opposed to the application that resulted in that?
Well, I think, you know, once again, intellectuals tend to have a leftist persuasion. All the reasons for that is hard to define exactly, except that that's the way that it tends to be. They typically are not pro-war. They particularly are not pro-business. It's hard to picture an artist as being pro-business. So I think it's a tendency that their worldview or Weltanschauung is something different than what would be in the fascist mentality. So therefore, I think that fascism wants realism, you know, in their art. I don't believe that they want anything that's esoteric or not in the mainstream, and that threatens them, you know, because it's out of the ordinary.
Now, you explained earlier that you looked at the modern, though no longer in power, fascist states of Nazi Germany, fascist Italy, Franco Spain, Salazar's Portugal, the Greek colonels, Pinochet's Chile, and Suharto's Indonesia. And we'll come back to this later in the series, but it's interesting to note that the United States government supported many, if not all, of these countries to various degrees at the time they were fascist.
Yeah, they did. As a matter of fact, several of them, we put them in power.
Mm-hmm.
Chile, Indonesia, and Greece in particular, we had a hand in putting them in power. Not something we should be proud of, but
yeah, and there were
nevertheless it's true.
And there were elements of, if not the government, at least the business elites of the United States that allowed Hitler to assume and maintain power in Germany. Not so sure about Mussolini in Italy, Franco in Spain, or Salazar in Portugal. We can leave that for future programs. But you said that these 14 characteristics were evident in all seven. And I'm curious if you could explain to us a couple or three characteristics that were not evident in all of them and thus did not make the list, but were evident in, you know, maybe a majority of them, but not all. What didn't get on the list that you would still think of as characteristics of some of these fascist states?
Well, I would have to go back to my basic notes to be able to tell you that offhand.
Okay.
And I don't have them all in front of me. There were specific ethnic issues, you know, that existed. Like, for instance, in Greece, it was the fight that they had with the Turks over Cyprus. That was a big issue that was kind of specific there. In Spain, it was the issues that were around the Catholic Church, which was also true in Italy, which was not true in Germany. In Indonesia, there were the issues with the religious animosities that existed with East Timor. So there were a lot of specific ethnic and religious issues that tied into specific countries, but didn't obviously tie into all of them.
So, okay,
you know,
cool.
I would have to go back through my research to really pin those down.
Okay, yeah, I was just curious if anything kind of leapt to mind that was just fresh in your mind about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for being on the program here this morning.
Okay, you're welcome.
We've been speaking with Larry Britt. He is a writer and commentator on political and economic affairs for much of the last 20 years. He is author of Fascism Anyone, an article in Free Inquiry magazine, which characterizes 14 common traits of 7 modern fascist states. And we will use these as the basis of a continuing series on fascism in the United States. He is also author of a chapter on fascism for a book to be released tentatively March of this year called Power and the Global Economy. Larry Britt, thank you for joining us on People Rise Up this morning.
Thank you, Andy.
All right, take care.
All right, bye now.
And I'm going to close the show out here by doing a little bit more reading here from someone who knows fascism like few of us could. And that's Benito Mussolini, Italian fascist dictator for a little over 20 years, about 1922 to 1945. This is from the Modern History Sourcebook available at Fordham University. And this is paraphrasing here, especially due to time. This is from the entry written with Giovanni Gentile for the Italian Encyclopedia on the definition of fascism. Fascism believes neither in the possibility nor the utility of perpetual peace. The fascist accepts life and loves it, conceives of life as duty, struggle, and conquest, but above all for others, those at hand and those who are far distant, contemporaries and those who will come after. Fascism is the complete opposite of Marxian socialism. Fascism believes in holiness and in heroism, in actions influenced by no economic motive, direct or indirect. Above all, fascism denies that class war can be the preponderant force in the transformation of society. Fascism combats the whole complex system of democratic ideology and repudiates it, whether in its theoretical premises or in its practical application. Fascism denies that the majority, by the simple fact that it is a majority, can direct human society, and it affirms the immutable, beneficial, and fruitful inequality of mankind. The foundation of fascism is the conception of the state, its character, its duty, and its aim. Fascism conceives of the state as an absolute, with all individuals or groups only to be conceived of in their relation to the state. The fascist state organizes the nation, but leaves a sufficient margin of liberty to the individual. The latter is deprived of all useless and possibly harmful freedom, but retains what is essential. The deciding power in this question cannot be the individual, but the state alone. For fascism, the growth of empire is an essential manifestation of vitality. Peoples which are rising are always imperialist, and renunciation is a sign of decay and of death. Empire demands discipline, the coordination of all forces, and a deeply felt sense of duty and sacrifice. And with that, I will draw this inaugural edition of It Is Happening Here, Fascism in the United States. If you have comments or questions regarding this or any other show I've done, you can send email to me at kboo@riseup.net. The People Rise Up website at kboo.fm has links related to this morning's program and will encompass many, many links related to fascism in the United States over the course of the year. Thank you very much for listening to this program. Coming up next, Chris Andre will speak with Noura Erekat, a legal advocate with the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation, and they will be discussing a campaign to get the Caterpillar company to cease its bulldozer sales to Israel. Do stay tuned for that. Democracy Now! Will be up at 11.